from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Well, with a diverse population that includes immigrants from across the globe, the Bay Area is a hotbed of World Cup fever. Can the U.S. team overcome being placed in a tough group that includes Germany, Portugal, and Ghana? And what are the odds of victory for perennial powerhouse and host nation Brazil, or for the last cup winners, Spain and France? And what country are you rooting for and why? Well, we have Alan Black with us in studio. He's a soccer columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle. He teaches a course called Soccer, Mirror for Everything at the Osher Lifelong Institute for Learning at San Francisco State. That'll begin tomorrow, June 10th. And good to have you with us, Alan Black.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. By the way, I don't know if you managed to hear the opining of Professor Kittleson in the last segment, but he said it's going to be tough if Brazil loses to Argentina. But let's talk first about America, that is the United States and Ghana, because Ghana proved to be pretty tough last time.
Yes, in fact, Ghana has claimed the United States, scalping the previous two World Cups. And some of the talk coming out of Ghana this year seems to indicate that they're confident of taking the third.
Although the United States just won a pregame with Nigeria, I guess. How tough were they?
Well, Nigeria was a different type of game, I think, from Ghana. A lot more forceful and strong, different style of football, really, altogether, or soccer. So Ghana are still a bit of an unknown quantity, I think. Every 4 years, teams change, new players come in, but I'm sure that the Americans have been doing their intelligence on the Ghanaian prospects.
Well, this American team, there was a big story on it in the New York Times Sunday magazine about how Jurgen Klinsmann has tried to create a very different kind of American team.
Yes, this is really the crux of the debate in American soccer right now about whether the Klinsmann plan will become the new direction. We're about to find that out. One thing we will know at the end of the World Cup is where the United States stands in terms of its international soccer development.
What do you mean by the Klinsmann plan, by the way?
Well, I think he brings a certain amount of, how can I put it, maybe more forcefulness, taking away somewhat of the pedestrian quality of the US when it has played previous World Cups, almost challenging, I think, the collegiate idea of soccer that, you know, the United States soccer is born from. He comes from the tradition of German football with its rigors and hardness and its dedication and discipline and all those other elements that, you know, make great soccer teams like Germany. So he's trying to apply this method to an American way. Now, how do we see it manifested on the field? This is what's quite interesting. There is a bright, sunny optimism about a lot of the United States play. We see that coming out of the midfield. We see the way that the players are breaking forward quickly. We see the way that the Americans are optimistically going up against stronger opponents and bringing some of those, if you like, cultural values into the idea that the U.S. can compete.
We got himself in a bit of hot water culturally by the whole Landon Donovan episode, particularly saying that, well, Kobe Bryant, he used that analogy. He said, well, Kobe Bryant may have been a great player, but we don't necessarily have to use him now. And there's a lot of criticism. What about this replacing Chris Wondolowski for Landon Donovan, as you see it?
Wondolowski, yes. Well, Donovan, he went on sabbatical a couple of years ago. He took time off from his professional career when the United States needed him in a World Cup qualifying game against Honduras, which they subsequently lost. This didn't do any favours in the boss's mind. You know, when you come to work, you're here to perform. If I call on you, you do it. But Donovan, a sort of, you know, he's a Californian. He has, if you like, modern ideas about his mental health, decided he wanted to go and discover himself, to go into the wilderness, if you like, to find out whether he still had the energy, whether he still had the desire to play soccer at the top level. Now, this didn't sit well with someone like Klinsmann, who probably is thinking, you're a soccer player. You retire when you're 35. There's another 50 years to discover yourself by going into the wilderness to find out who you are. I think that was a large element to the decision to drop Donovan. Very controversial. Because Donovan is the saint of American soccer. 4 years ago, he scored the most transformative goal in the history of the country. He scored in the last second against Algeria, took the United States to the second round of the World Cup. It became a global goal.
Somebody said he's the Will Clark of that kind of football.
And by Will Clark, I think he was he not baseball?
yeah, he was baseball.
So he was, so Donovan, you know, he had that, you know, gravitas that's been challenged. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
I was thinking of the great catch of the Super Bowl, and I said, it was Dwight Clark.
Dwight Clark, that's right.
And I said Will Clark. So let's get that all straight. If the U.S. is going to move on here, though, they need to have upsets again. And not only get past Ghana, but upsets against Germany and Portugal.
Indeed, they call it the group of death. And, you know, I've wondered what the group of life is in soccer, but this is definitely the group of death. Portugal, Germany, they are established powerhouses in world soccer. You know, Cristiano Ronaldo is the World Player of the Year. He plays for Portugal.
They say he's the best in the world.
Yes, and he probably is, pound for pound. And he's, you know, a superstar. He can carry a game on his own. I don't fancy being the U.S. defenders when they see Cristiano Ronaldo charging at you at full speed.
But also France and Spain remain strong, don't they?
Indeed. They always do. The French, historically, they won the World Cup in 1998, a great transformative moment for the society, for the country. But they sometimes come to the World Cup with problems within the camp amongst the players. And if you do not have that unity of purpose, you know, these guys are sharing hotel rooms with each other for a month. They're isolated from their families. They may be, their egos will get in the way. They may not like someone. These things can, you know, spread through the team and cause a World Cup not to be successful. France has that history, at least in the last World Cup, but this time round they look pretty strong. Spain, world champions, in some ways I think they're even stronger this year than they were 4 years ago.
Really?
In some ways I do.
Some people are talking about their aging team.
Well, yes, but I just feel that there are so many more young players. The Spanish league has spread out and become stronger. They have a, you know,
they got a new king too.
They have a new king.
I don't know if that makes any difference, but there's also talk about the South American side of this. We heard Professor Kittleson say, boy, it's going to be all hell breaking loose if Argentina beats Brazil because of that rivalry. But also Uruguay figures in this, and there are people who write about soccer. They say if you're going to hate any player, hate Luis Suarez, because didn't he bite somebody a couple of times?
A couple of times. He is the cannibal of the World Cup coming up. He has a reputation for biting and for other things on the field. It's part of the tradition in South America for a lot of soccer players. You know, you don't just play by the rules. You
part of the tradition? I thought maybe Mike Tyson started it in boxing.
Well, you know, in Argentina, Maradona had the hand of God goal when he scored with his hand in 1986, and he was a national hero.
Well, let's bring our listeners into this. We're previewing the World Cup, which starts on Thursday in Brazil, and want to know if you're rooting for a particular team and why, and what do you think about the team U.S. and its chances, and do you have a plan for actually watching the World Cup? You have a regular group that you want to watch with, or party, or a bar that you want to go to and watch it? We have Alan Black here to answer World Cup questions, and I'll throw out that question I threw out before as well, which is simply, do you care? I mean, if you're an American particularly, do you care? All this talk about American apathy where the World Cup and soccer in general is concerned. You are welcome to join us now. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. And let's just go to our callers here and not Terry. Yoshi is first up. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for taking my call.
Welcome.
I'll be going to my fifth World Cup this time around, and I'll be leaving end of this month. Hello.
Who are you rooting for, and what are you going to see?
Actually, I'm not rooting for any particular country, even though I'm American. I love the game. When I went to South Africa, I didn't root for any particular game. I just want to see a beautiful game, and that's what it means to me to go see a soccer game, especially for the World Cup.
An American who's passionate about the World Cup and loves the World Cup. There you go, and actually goes to them all. Thank you, Yoshi. Maybe somewhat anomalous, maybe not. We'll hear from some more listeners here. Joe, let's get you on. Hi.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. My point goes back to, you know, Americans taking notice of soccer. We have an amazing homegrown professional soccer league, the major MLS soccer, and basically at the end of this month to kind of show how much homegrown support we have for soccer. There's a game at Stanford Stadium between the San Jose Earthquakes and the Los Angeles Galaxy, and that's called the California Clasico. Last year, I believe the attendance figures were over 50,000 people. This year, they're expecting more. And I think it just proves that, you know, as things evolve here, and we are definitely getting into soccer here in America.
Okay, thank you for that call. Opine on this, Alan Black?
Yes, the caller's right. The sport is certainly growing, but soccer's been popular for a long time, almost under the surface in the US, going back to the seeds being planted in the 50s and the 60s when the suburbs developed and soccer fields were laid out and all that land, and kids started playing it, and then their parents would take them to their games on the Saturdays, and then the parents would understand the game and they started to connect with it on an emotional level, and this grew. And then when the business apparatus around soccer began to coalesce after the 1994 World Cup, which was hosted here in the US, then you started to have that financial apparatus and dynamic around the game that created the professional level that's now projecting forward through the globalization of soccer, through media. You can watch soccer 24 hours a day pretty much on TV now.
Well, here's another point of view on our Facebook page. Ken writes, I want to enjoy soccer, but it just seems like so much empty back and forth. I also hate the idea that you can complete a game as a draw. But I do concede the beauty of a good scoring play. I pay marginal attention to a couple of English Premier League teams, mostly because I have so many friends, both virtual on Facebook and Twitter and analog, who are soccer fans, and I genuinely want to know what makes this game riveting to them. Some of that is just coming by it naturally. But here's another interesting question from a listener. Faye asks, why does a sport inspire such violence? Riots and soccer hooliganism stand in sharp contrast to far more well-behaved spectators of America's field sports. Sorry, you're dreaming there, Faye. But she's right, though. There has been this tradition also of hooliganism identified with soccer and a lot of rioting.
And that's for sure. Soccer has had hooligan problems going back to its very inception in the 19th century. A working-class game, an organic culture, not produced by sports franchises seeking an entertainment dollar as much as coming up from beneath. And so with the development of regional identities, national identities, everything that is focused into those geopolitical tensions between cultures and people inevitably expresses itself in a stadium. And soccer has had a long run and continues to have many problems with the expressions of the tensions within the societies that it takes place.
And let us not forget the libations, too, that contribute to that. There's a lot of alcohol with soccer.
Well, there was and there is around soccer stadiums. Very much more controlled situation now in the United Kingdom, where you had a serious hooligan problem there in the 1980s. In fact, I believe in Brazil for this World Cup, they had to change the laws. It's called the Budweiser Law, which allowed the Brazilians to host the World Cup so that beer could be sold in their stadiums. I believe that drinking was banned.
Well, we got a call, speaking of Budweiser, from St. Louis. Sarah, join us. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm calling. My husband and I are not Bosnian, but we're heavily involved in the Bosnian community in St. Louis, and which is actually the largest Bosnian community in the world outside of Sarajevo. So we're following Bosnia making the World Cup this year, which is quite a great story.
And they have a good team, actually.
They do, yeah.
Well, they have.
Zeko.
Yes, I was just going to say that. Sorry to cut you off there. Edin Dzeko, he is a fantastic player. I think that he is one of the candidates to win the Golden Boot at the World Cup this year. He's a striker who has this incredible capacity to break free and score almost at will.
Right, and playing for Manchester City, of course, won the Premier League this year. But in St. Louis, and there's been a lot of press, with, again, them making it for the first time, that Dzeko has really inspired a lot of the refugees here. He himself, fled the country at a young age during the bloody war and was able to rise above that and become arguably one of the best players in the world. So it's really inspired the community here. We're really enjoying watching their bid to the World Cup.
Well, we thank you for the call. This whole sense of, the rabid nature of how people root for their home countries or countries they identify with and everything, it's extraordinary phenomenon. But sometimes, there's all this controversy. I wonder what you think about this, Alan. You hear people say, particularly perhaps from more the right, who are these people who are immigrants and they become American citizens and then they, you know, they're rooting for and flying the flag for their home country. And you see this, or you hear this as somehow seeing these people as being too divided. They shouldn't be divided. If they're American citizens, they should root for America, that kind of notion. It's a kind of boosterism that, you know, is maybe silly to some, but to others seems to matter a good deal.
Well, where you're from, your roots, you still have a connection. Some are more connected than others.
You are from the old side, I take it?
I am from the old country north of Hadrian's Wall and in Scotland. And, you know, I think that question is you get to pick and choose your identity when you're an immigrant in the United States. And, you know, for me, there's an element of nostalgia. I can select whichever emblem of Scotland I want off the shelf at any particular moment and can forget the other ones that I would gladly forget. And when it comes to supporting the soccer team, you still support it, especially if they're playing England, of course. Just kidding to my English fans out there.
But come on, you're one country now.
Well, maybe not for much longer. But that's
no, that's
but,
true.
But that's another story.
That's another program. Here's Oren, who says, with all the sense of entitlement that we see in our sports stars, why do we care and promote this in Brazil?
Why do we promote the World Cup in Brazil?
Yeah, leave that hanging out there. That's just a question from a listener. I mean, unless you have an answer you want to supply.
Well, FIFA decides, the World Cup takes place every 4 years and countries bid on the World Cup. Of course, that's very controversial in light of the 2022 World Cup in Qatar coming up. But, you know, they try to spread around the world the country that will host it so that everybody gets a chance.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how corrupt is FIFA from your perspective?
Well, 9.99999 to the nth degree, I guess.
Candid response. Let me get some more callers on here. We go to Oakland. Gennaro, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Michael. I just wanted to, first of all, say thank you for covering the World Cup. Very important thing. And then a really good place in Oakland to go see the games is going to be the New Parkway Theater. You can sit in a couch and watch the games on a big screen for like $5. It's really cheap. You could have yourself a beer and some pizza, and that's really nice. And then I'm going to say let's go Argentina because Argentina is a particularly good team to win against Brazil when in Brazil.
Okay. Are you from? I take it you're from Argentina, Gennaro?
I'm from Argentina, yeah. And I have a big Brazilian community. I do capoeira, and I have a lot of Brazilian friends, and this is the time where hopefully I'll be celebrating.
Well, I appreciate your call. I'm not going to be biased here for any team. I am an American, after all. But let me go to another caller. Tracy, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm sort of your average, American a family person, and we put all the names of all the teams into a jar and with all our friends, and we picked out randomly. You didn't get to choose. And so you rooted for that team that you picked out of the jar, and it got us all so involved because we each had teams we were supporting.
No money involved, though, huh?
No, just picking teams, and that way the kids got so involved with their teams, and we learned all about the teams, and we watched every single game. We became crazy, and you rooted for your team. And this year I actually drew Croatia. I drew two teams. I drew Croatia and Ghana. So those are my teams. So I'm rooting for them.
You're going to root for Ghana against the U.S. in this opening game?
Because, well, I always like the U.S., but just in the whole bracket thing. So those will be my teams. I don't know a lot about them, but now I'm going to watch them.
Well, we've already talked a little bit about Ghana. Croatia actually looked pretty good to you, Alan Black?
Yes, Croatia are always, capable of causing an upset. And I think that's wonderful about the World Cup. It's almost like a great geography lesson, is that people get to actually concentrate a little bit on the names of countries that they may or may not hear of, throughout the year. And, that's the beauty of it. It's what the caller said about being Argentinian with a Brazilian connection. And it's that beauty when it all merges together. This is the great sense of the World Cup, is that the world, does come together once every 4 years.
And thank you, Tracy. Good luck. Let me go to Denver, Colorado. Welcome. Scott, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi there. How are you?
Okay, thank you.
So, yeah, so I'm headed to Brazil here tomorrow and going to the U.S. Ghana game as well as four other games down in Brazil.
Got your tickets?
Got tickets. You know, staying down there, and it should be just a great time.
And you are rooting for the U.S.?
Rooting for the U.S. This is the fourth World Cup that I've been to. Got excited about the going when they came to the U.S. in 94. And I'm just really looking forward to getting down to Brazil, the country that has won the most World Cups, and after 64 years is hosting once again.
Well, have yourself a good time, and thank you for the call. And I'm going to go right to another caller, and that's, is it Bijan?
Yes.
Hi. You're on.
Hello. Hi, good morning. So obviously I'm from Iranian descent here in the Bay Area. First of all, I really root for USA. I hope USA had more fan base because, you know, Americans always take things to the next level. I always wondered that if America was more fan of soccer, what good they could do for soccer in the world. Secondly, the rest of the world is really crazy about soccer. I mean, I've been throughout the whole Europe and everywhere, and people love this sport. And I'm from Iran, so I'm rooting for Iran religiously. People are really crazy about soccer in Iran and throughout of Asia. And also, I wanted to just add that Iran is in the same group as Bosnia, and they're going to have a game together, the last game in the Group F. And I wish U.S. best of luck, and go Iran.
I have to ask you, what does it mean to root religiously?
Look, Iran is a strong in wrestling, powerlifting. Volleyball is in the top 10 in the world right now. But football is something else. Like, people go crazy for soccer, and that people live by that. They get their aspirations and inspirations from soccer.
Well, Alan Black is kind of our resident odds maker today. How do Iran's chances look against Bosnia?
I believe it's about 3,000 to 1. No, sorry, that's to win the World Cup. My mistake. Against Bosnia, probably less than that, but it's going to be tough to beat Bosnia.
Well, good luck to you, and thank you, Bijan. Actually, to beat Ghana, the United States is going to have to neutralize their midfield. This is what I'm reading.
Yes, indeed, but the United States has a very strong midfield that can easily do that. You know, we have Jermaine Jones and Michael Bradley. Those are the key players to watch. Yeah. They are going to be an essential component of being able to dominate the midfield. That's how soccer games are won. Whoever marches through the centre ends up taking the gold.
Here's some listener emails before I go to more calls. Sioban writes, I'm an American-born white woman who never played or paid attention to soccer. I'm now engaged to a Honduran man and watch MLS and national games with him all the time. Intercultural coupling may contribute to America's interest in soccer. Thanks for the show. Fraser writes, seems to me that soccer has had a hard time taking hold in the U.S., largely because there is so little soccer televised. Well, if you have cable, that's not true. But he says, I can only imagine that's due to the lack of opportunities for broadcasters to take commercial breaks. Profit in sports in the U.S. has much to do with television and professional sports, and cable broadcasters are close bedfellows. But you can see a lot of soccer on TV. Jason writes, soccer is growing in the U.S. First game I ever watched was the 2006 World Cup final, France versus Italy in Dolores Park, and immediately fell in love with the game. Afterwards, I began to notice a growing amount of friends becoming interested in soccer and watching the growth of the USA team. I'm rooting for Spain, only because my roots are Spaniard, but I'm interested in seeing how far the USA will go, or can go. We'll go to more of your calls. Sina, good morning.
Hi. I'm calling from San Francisco. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted you to comment, or Alan maybe, to comment a little bit more about the U.S.'s chances of getting out of the first round. I was reading something about this morning, something that sounded kind of optimistic about U.S.'s chances, Ronaldo having a minor injury and whatnot, and maybe Germany not playing their full squad the third game if they've already qualified for the second round. I'm going to be rooting for the U.S., to be honest, but I don't see them advancing out of the first round at all. Germany is a team that regularly goes to, you know, the semifinal or the final. I mean, Portugal got the best player in the world. They have made it to the semifinal on numerous occasions. So I just don't see the U.S. advancing, and I was wondering if you could just comment on that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Portugal, Cristiano Ronaldo. a witch doctor in Ghana, has been putting a hex on him, apparently, for the last several months, and is now claiming that he has his injuries thanks to the combination of his magic powers. So depending on whether or not he still has them, Portugal will be a threat with Ronaldo or not. They are obviously capable of winning against any team on any given day. Germany...
Is FIFA investigating this witch doctor practice?
That's probably a good idea. But I think they should be investigating themselves before they investigate the witch doctors.
So the irony in my question.
But, you know, Germany has a team of, you know, 23 players who are all world class. You know, and the depth of the squad is really what is important to figuring out how far a country can go in the World Cup. But in saying that, though, every country comes to the World Cup with exactly the same types of anxiety. You either come there feeling that you're not good enough to compete in the group, maybe you won't get out of it. Or you come there with way too much confidence, or the concept of disappointment can also labour on teams. So I think that, you know, each team starts with an equal chance. The United States is perfectly capable of playing some very good football and getting the results that we need to get into the second round.
We're talking with Alan Black, soccer columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle. He'll be teaching a course, Soccer Mirror for Everything, at the Osher Lifelong Institute for Learning at San Francisco State. That begins tomorrow, June 10th. And let's go to Woodside and welcome Priscilla. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm calling from the Bay Area. And what got me to call was when you were talking about being an American citizen, however, I'm from Brazil. I'm married to an American, and I have an American baby, but I can't help it, and root for my team. I just get too excited and, you know, emotional, and everything comes in. Just when I see a commercial or just the preparation for the World Cup, I'm not going to be there, but I'm too excited about it, and it would be quite hard for me to root for America, I have to say.
Understood. Maybe that's a whole other question. Program. We've got seconds left here with you, Alan. There's some local angles to this. Clarence Goodrun, for example, San Jose Earthquakes, yeah?
Clarence Goodson?
Goodson, excuse me.
No, he didn't make the team.
That's right. But who did from this area?
Wondolowski. Chris Wondolowski.
That's the only one.
That's the only one from the Quakes.
Okay. And we've got a lot of people on the USA team from different countries, too. Yeah?
Yes, Germany is. We have four or five players from Germany.
So you got a pick?
Well, I like Italian opera. So we'll go with Italy.
Oh, okay. This is a true diplomat. Alan Black, again, teaching a course in Soccer Mirror for Everything at the Osher Lifelong Institute for Learning. You can read him in the Chronicle, and you can stay tuned for another hour of Forum. John Waters is going to be here with us in the hour ahead, filmmaker and author. When we return, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.